going back over this past week, we've had a fair number of data readings out the US which give us a little bit of a hint of what's going on. We've got some potential slowing in US economic growth, not as much as you might expect given some of the turmoil that's been occurring, but we've also got plenty of evidence that inflation is still pretty well supported. So taking the signs that growth might be coming back a little bit, we've got the leading indicators, the manufacturing, ISM PMI, and also the non-manufacturing PMI, the services sector PMI, both those came out last week, and they were softer. So the manufacturing PMI came down to 48.5 from 48.7. That's just inside the contractionary area, really, and it's not unduly weak. And we also had the ISM non-manufacturing PMI. Now, that one was more interesting because the services sector has been holding up very, very well. And we've had readings which have largely been sitting above the 50 mark, sometimes up 52s, 53s over recent months. Going back to April, it was at 51.6. Was expected to hold above 50, but it came just inside the 50 at 49.9. So that's one of the slowest readings we've seen going back over the course of the past year. But the real conundrum is that when some of the other questions inside both of these surveys suggest that there's still no real weakness running through employment. The employment indicators inside those are well above 50, and the prices paid, which look at where prices might be going, they're well above 60, above 70 in the case of the manufacturing ISM, and high 60s for the non-manufacturing ISM. So, you know, they're a real conundrum because they're suggesting that there's some slowing, but there's still a lot of strength running through inflation pressure, and there's still no sign that the tight labour market in the US, whilst it's moderated a little bit, is going away. Just in terms of the labour market, initial jobless claims for the most recent week, they did lift to 247,000 from 239,000 on revision the previous week. Not unduly weak. So, yeah, they're a bit softer than where they've been going back over the last few months, but not yet heralding any real weakness running through the labour market. But then we got the non-farm payrolls at the end of the week, and they're holding up pretty well. So we had May non-farm payrolls, and they came in up 139,000. That was stronger than expected. And after revision, the previous month was 147,000. So we've still got not incredibly strong growth running through jobs growth, but it's still there. And on top of that, the earnings that are coming through are actually lifting a little bit. We had May average hourly earnings came out. They were expected to be up 0.3% month on month. They're up 0.4%. So that means that the annual growth in wages is running at 3.9%, both on revision for April. April is actually revised up a bit from 3.8 to 3.9, and for May at 3.9% year on year. Now, that compares with inflation, and we're going to see the latest inflation reading this week. And the latest inflation reading is expected to be go up a little bit from 2.3% year on year to 2.5, and the core is expected to go up from 2.8 to 2.9. But you know, they're well below the labour market readings. Now, that wouldn't matter too much if we were getting good productivity change, and there had been good productivity change running through the US, but in Q1, that's come back. So in Q1, we had Q1 non-farm productivity, and it was minus 1.5% on the quarter. And as a result of that, unit labour costs are rising pretty fast. They were up 6.6% in Q1. So, you know, we've got these interesting pressures which, not this week, but the week after when the Fed meets, it's got to balance these. And another factor is that we're going to see quite a bounce in GDP growth in the US. It's a little bit artificial when we get Q2 data right at the end of July. And of course, the Fed's got to watch towards that when it's thinking about what it should be doing with policy. If you go back to Q1, GDP growth in the US is minus 0.2% annualized. But we had the Atlanta Fed GDP Now survey came out, and it's looking at 3.8% growth in GDP in the second quarter. And they may say, how does that happen? Well, how it happens is that one of the big factors which was holding down growth in Q1, which was US companies bringing forward import orders in order to try and run ahead of the tariffs that were being announced by President Trump, led to a massive increase in the US trade deficit. And so those imports detract from, or that growth in imports detract from US GDP. We've just had the April trade data come out from the United States, and the trade balance has more than halved. The deficit over the past month, it's gone from minus $138.3 billion, that's the deficit, to only 61.6. Now, that's a huge change in 1 month, and it shows that you're getting the flip side of that now, where you know they've already imported a lot of stuff, so they're starting to run back on that. So the trade account is going to give a huge boost to US growth when we get the second quarter figures. So this is a sort of strange world, apart from everything that President Trump's announcing from time to time as well, that the Fed's going to face, not this week, but the week after. It was one of the reasons why they left their funds rate at 4.5% going back a while. On top of this, this is also a reason why, with this threat of inflation on the horizon, with some of the things that President Trump's been doing, one that led to his big rift with Elon Musk was his big, beautiful bill, which covers so many things. But one of the things it covers is a pretty hefty lift in U.S. government debt, because what he's giving away in tax cuts, he's nowhere near covering in terms of any sort of savings in terms of government spending. So with this big, beautiful bill, which has already gone through the lower house over there in the United States and is running to the Senate now, that will mean that U.S. government debt, currently running around about 100% of GDP, will run up over the next few years to well above 130% of GDP. So, there's these pressure points which are running through interest rates in the United States, which don't look as if they're going to go away very much in the near term. Moving to China. In China, we're just starting to see the pressure that's coming through from those tariff announcements. Most tariff announcements are in abeyance at the moment because obviously there's still negotiation going on between China and the United States. Those talks are getting pretty sticky at the moment in the United States, and they will be harmful in terms of Chinese economic activity, particularly running through its trade account. And we saw that in data that came out yesterday. We had their trade balance or trade data came out. May exports, the growth rate, the annual growth rate, has come back a long way, more than expected, from 8.1% year-on-year growth to only 4.8% year-on-year growth. China's exports to the United States fell by 35% in just 1 month. That's giving you some idea of some of these pressure points coming through from trade policies from Trump in action. The import side was weak as well. Imports into China, they were expected to be down 0.9% after being down 0.2% year-on-year the month before. They were down 3.4%. So the trade account is weak. And that means that China has to find some way of boosting its own domestic demand to compensate, because it's trade that's been one of the big drivers of growth over many, many years in China, and it really is in some trouble now. Other features that tell us that the Chinese economy is pretty weak at the moment: we had the May CPI and producer prices came out, both very, very soft. So the CPI was down 0.2% month on month and is now down 0.1% year on year. Very mild deflation through the CPI. Much stronger deflation running through producer prices. So the producer price index came out, and that's down 3.3% year-on-year, worse than expected after being down 2.7% year-on-year going back the month before. So the pressure points are starting to show there as far as China's concerned. We also had some cakes in manufacturing PMI, non-manufacturing PMI data came out. The manufacturing PMI came down to 48.3 from 50.4, so that's fairly significant fall there for the manufacturing side in China. The non-manufacturing side, not so bad. We've had all those fiscal announcements coming from China over the last month or two, and that lifted slightly to 51.1 from 50.7. They need a lot more strength running through there as they go ahead. Now, moving to Australia, and last week, you know, the key event really was our Q1 GDP data, and what it showed was more sluggish growth than expected. It's still pretty soft. GDP rose only 0.2% quarter on quarter. It was up 0.6% going back the quarter before, so there's been a bit of a deceleration running through there. The annual rate of growth is held at 1.3%. You know, that's not particularly strong year on year. Now, some of the features inside there, we had some pulling back in growth running through household consumption expenditure, which is the biggest part of spending on GDP. It came back to 0.4% increase from 0.8 going back the quarter before. So there's been a little bit of slowing running through there. The household sector, though, has got a huge boost in household disposable income in the quarter. It's just that it applied a fairly large part of that towards savings rather than spending. So the household savings ratio went up from 3.9% of household disposable income to 5.4%. 5.4% is now well above what you'd normally expect for the household savings ratio. So there's some ability there for households to spend if they become confident. And the story inside GDP about household spending is not all gloom, because they are spending very, very freely now on things like housing. And so the housing component of GDP lifted very strongly. It's up over 2% quarter on quarter. It's up over 5% in real terms year on year. And that goes hand in hand with some of the data we've seen recently about house prices starting to lift again. Housing finance data has been somewhat stronger over the last month or two. So, you know, these are the sorts of things that suggest that whilst the household sector was a little bit gloomy in Q1, it may not stay there, because housing is a pretty strong leading indicator. When you're getting housing spending lifting like that, tends to suggest that you tend to run on into some growth running through more general household spending as you go down the track. There's a problem there, though, because that housing spending is coming through at a time when supply of housing is still very constrained. And so at the moment, the housing component of the CPI is actually softer than where it's been over the past year. That's largely because mortgage rates have come down. House prices for a period there were somewhat softer. That's starting to change again. And so housing is probably going to be one of those inflation components of the CPI again before we go very much further. So there's some interesting factors there inside that that GDP read. Another one, though, was that businesses are still not spending particularly freely at all. And so we had pressure points coming through from that because it meant the productivity change was absolutely zero, same as it was the month before. On a year-on-year basis, it's down 1%, so we've got no productivity change. And you know, that means that the only way we grow this economy is just throwing labour into the pot, because businesses aren't investing. And so that's not a particularly sort of attractive prospect as far as the economy is concerned. Another one of the factors that held back growth in Q1 too was the trade part. And we had exports where we went from 0.8% growth quarter on quarter in real terms going back to Q1 to minus 0.1% in the first quarter. Now, where that came from was largely exports of services, and particularly education services. So the we're doing a bit of self-inflicted harm here, because we're cutting back on students coming into Australia, and it's starting to show in terms of a pretty important export there. And so that's starting to hurt growth to some degree as well. So all told, these figures, they show sluggish growth. And what that implies is that you know, the Reserve Bank in the near term can be reasonably happy that inflation will stay down, but there's also some hints in here that it won't stay down longer term. And so that's where, yes, they can continue to cut rates, and they probably will at the next meeting in July, but there's a limit to how far they can cut rates in this type of economic environment, even though growth is actually quite slow. We had April household spending data came out as well. That was fairly soft too. It was only up 0.1% month on month. And as a result of that, the annual rate of growth has come down to 3.7% year on year from 3.8%. Worth noting, though, that on the inflation rate that we got at the moment at 2.4%, that is real growth. So, you know, we still have some real annual growth running through household spending at the moment. Moving into this week, and we get surveys coming out, business surveys and consumer sentiment surveys. We get the MAB Business Conditions Business Confidence Survey come out the month of May. Business conditions still just on the side of optimism, plus two there. Zeros, you know, obviously the balance between pessimists and optimists in this survey. So rather more optimists than pessimists running through the business conditions survey going back last month. We'll see if that holds for the May reading. Business confidence, though, not quite so good, minus one, and probably still going to have a negative figure on it this month as well. June Westpac consumer sentiment. Last month we had a lift in consumer sentiment, up 2.2% month on month, and that was largely because obviously we had the rate cut running back in May. It'll be interesting to see whether we can hold that gain or whether that peels back a bit with the data that comes this week. But these are not the key data readings. Go forward a week, and not this week, but next week, we'll have the latest labour force data, and that will be an interesting read, remembering that last month we had that massive 89,000 increase in employment, so still showing a very, very tight labour market. So, but this week, this data is probably not going to be that important in the scheme of things, shifting market sentiment. Moving to Europe. Europe's starting to distinguish itself a bit from Australia. You know, we've got relatively sluggish growth. We've got obviously some of our big trading partners in this region are facing problems too. We had Japanese GDP growth and that was fairly flat. The Chinese are facing some difficulties, and much of this relates back to the tariffs announced by the United States. Europe obviously is facing its own issues with tariff negotiations with the US, but their economies seem to be doing a little bit better. And we saw that with the revision to Q1 GDP that came out for Europe last week. It was revised up from 0.3% quarter-on-quarter in Q1 to 0.6%. You know, that's three times our growth rate in Q1. And the year-on-year growth rate's gone up from 1.2% to 1.5%. So that's better than ours too. So a bit more strength running through there. They had their unemployment data came out. It went down one notch to a new record low for this century, 6.2% unemployment rate from 6.3. We did have manufacturing services sector PMIs come out. They're both sitting just below the 50 mark, but not far below. Manufacturing PMI was 49.4, and that was actually better than the 49 going back the month before. Services sector PMI, though, drifted back to 49.7 from 50.1. They had their inflation readings coming out, and low energy prices in particular have been helping their inflation readings. And so the May preliminary CPI came out flat compared with a 0.6% monthly increase the month before. As a result of that, the annual inflation rate came down to 1.9% from 2.2%. And the core CPI came down to 2.3 from 2.7. The ECB met last week. They've cut rates again. They're very much focused on potential damage to European growth from obviously what's happening with trade negotiations and with the US. And so they've now got their deposit rate down to 2% from 2.25%. So, you've got a mix of things happening in Europe here at the moment. The ECB is busily bringing its interest rates down. Across the channel, the Bank of England hasn't been able to bring its interest rates down in the last month or so because they've got very high wage growth there at the moment. And they've got some growth coming back into an economy with no productivity, much like ours. And so the inflation risk is much higher in the UK than it is in Europe at the moment. But at some point, you'd expect that the inflation risk would start to come back to Europe, but not yet. So it's giving that leeway to the ECB. And this week in Europe, not a lot coming out. We've got investor confidence coming out. That has been improving. It's been in negative territory, minus 8.1 last month. Expected to come to minus 6. We've got industrial production. They had a very good March, up 2.6%, so there'll be some give back on that. And their trade balance so far has been holding up against what's been happening in the United States. They had a positive trade balance of 36.8 billion euro going back to March. That is expected to come back for the latest month. So, sorts of things that we're watching. Still financial markets sort of playing what has been called, I suppose, the taco trade, which is Trump always chickens out, and that they're watching everything to do with trade negotiations to see if this is still continuing. And that's what's helped to give rallies to risk assets fairly powerfully over the course of the last month or two. We've got bond markets, which have got one eye on growing government debt and also higher inflation, particularly in the United States, and so that's keeping their yields relatively high. And just watching the data to see whether there is any damage yet from what's been announced in terms of tariffs. The issue there is that a lot of this has been deferred till July the 1st whilst there's negotiations going on. Not always, because, obviously some of the tariffs have gone into place straight away, including the general 10% ones, which apply to most countries, and also, of course, the higher tariffs for steel and aluminium at 50%. So, we've still got those pressure points there, but it's a very, very mixed picture at the moment.